Hello everyone. My name is Francis Arnold and I'd like to welcome you to this fourth session in an ongoing series of webinars on sacred number and geometry. Those of you who have been attending these webinars have met Brett and Biel by now. Brett, would you like to say hi?
Hi everyone.
Brett's a crack troubleshooter and we really put him through his paces today. And an esotericist in his own right. I'm BL. You want to say hi?
Hello, everybody.
BL hosts a webinar on the labors of Hercules, which you might like to check out. And is that going to be starting again at the in December?
No, we've got the whole series out there on Makara for them to look at.
Okay, so you're not going to rebroadcast it?
Nah.
Okay, I see. And Biel is going to be helping me take your questions and comments. So, Biel, would you be so kind as to review the GoToMeeting thing?
Sure. You want to switch the slides? First off, for everybody, we would appreciate if you would like to participate if you had a headset. If you don't have a headset, there's a text box that you can see right here where you can type questions for us. There's also, most of you have been with us before, and you know where the hand, raising your hand is. If you have a question, you can raise your hand. Francis has a lot of material to cover, and he's going to go through some of it very quickly. So I can guarantee that if we can't get to every single one of your comments or questions, I will personally make a copy of them and send it to Francis later, and he'll be able to get back with you. There you see where the hand is on there to
Francis,
be able to raise your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Francis, we have a lot of static and banging around from your end.
Oh, well, I don't believe it's on my end.
As you're the user who's coming up when we hear it.
I'm sitting here perfectly silently.
I know it's fine now, but
oh,
watch out for moving your microphone and all that. Okay.
Okay, thank you, Ryan.
Okay. Over to you, Francis.
All right. I'd like to start by talking about the importance of symbols in sacred geometry and number. In his introduction to Glamour, A World Problem, DK tells us, symbols are the outer and visible forms of the inner spiritual realities. And when facility in discovering the reality behind any specific form has been gained, that very fact will indicate the awakening of the intuition. DK goes on to elucidate how we may gain this facility. And I think it's going to be worth our time to take a close look at his methods. He divides his approach into three segments, beginning with the exoteric or the physical attributes. He tells us, exoterically, this involves study of its form as a whole, of its line and therefore of its numerical significance, and also study of its sectional forms, by which I mean its arrangement. So let's attempt to apply these instructions to the yin-yang symbol, a symbol which you'll soon discover has many layers of meaning. We're going to spend some time on this because not only will becoming familiar with these methods help us to understand this symbol, we'll also be creating a template in terms of our technique, which we can then apply to other symbols and geometric forms. So what can we say about the line quality, the numerical significance, and the arrangement of the forms that make up the yin-yang symbol? At this point, we're not looking for meaning or significance, but rather for a tabulation of this figure's physical attributes. So we're going to open the floor in a minute, and when we call on you, please just briefly describe a single physical attribute. This can be quite obvious, right? Like the ones listed here. I've started a list for us. And some of these Some of these attributes are obvious, like the three I've listed here. Others you'll soon discover are quite hidden. So I'm going to come out of full screen mode here so that I can use my cursor and type in your responses. So any thoughts on this? BL, do we have any hands? This can be the most obvious things in the world. In fact, we want everything listed. So if you have an obvious thought, we'd like to hear about it. So first of all, let me read these three symbols, I have here already. The entire symbol is encompassed by a circle. So that's what I'm talking about by obvious, right? The circle is equally divided into a light and a dark half. Thus, this symbol is conditioned by both the numbers 1 and 2. Notice that these are all physical attributes. They don't have, we're not talking about meaning and significance as of yet. So, okay. Any thoughts about this?
Walter, go ahead.
Yes, there's a circle of light in the dark half and a circle of dark in the light half.
All right. Okay.
For another attribute.
That's right. Thank you, Walter. Any other thoughts?
Okay, I got a couple more hands, but let me read some of the comments typed in. Both flow seamlessly into one another. Feels like a dance, from Asha.
Okay. I'm going to write, I'm going to write flows seamlessly into one another. And you have to pardon my slow typing. I'm an artist, not a keyboardist. And hold that thought about the dance, because that comes under the heading of significance, how it makes you feel, how it's, meaning, which is what are these physical attributes leading to in terms of meaning. Other thoughts?
From Allison, there are five components, three circles, and the two negative spaces.
Very good. Okay. Three circles. Right. Okay. Yes. Other thoughts?
Yes. From Martin, the curved lines imply motion.
Yes, I think we can call that a physical attribute because they do. Curved lines. Okay.
The shape of each half suggests sperm cells.
Okay, let's hold that one for the next section. I agree with you. It's true. But it's not a strictly physical list, a list of physical attributes. You see where we're drawing the line here? These are what even the curved lines imply motion as kind of a borderline, because they certainly do, but is that our response to what we're seeing, or is it actually a physical attribute? So hold that thought and bring it back up in our next session.
Okay. From Linda, each half is the direct opposite of the other?
Absolutely. Okay.
I have lots more, but let me go to a hand here for a minute and then go back.
Okay.
Go ahead, please, Terry.
Yes, all the lines in the symbol are curved, and there are no straight lines.
Great. Okay. Terrific.
Next one from Dorothy. Symmetry and balance, equal amounts of light and dark.
I'm going to write perfect symmetry. Is that all right? Perfect symmetry. Okay.
And there was another comment from Iris that was pretty much the same thing.
Okay. Any other ideas? We're doing really well. You know, I just put 17 here because that's how much room I had. Doesn't mean we have to come up with 17 points. You know, that's getting close to, that's a good list.
Helen has her hand up. Go ahead, Helen.
Yes, Helen.
The small circles are directly opposite each other, and the space between them is equal.
Thank you.
Space inside here.
Okay. Spaces. Okay. Thank you. Any other thoughts? Any other comments?
Yes. Asha says, if you were to spin and increase the vibration of the visual symbol, it would be like a vortex of energy and would unify.
That's a fantastic comment, and it belongs in the next section. Actually, this, I'm very heartened by these comments that belong in the next section because that's generally the more difficult. So please hold these comments for and raise your hand again when we get to that section.
Okay, from Brent, each half starts as a point and ends in a circle or semicircle.
Brilliant.
Has her hand up.
I'll just put ends as a circle so we know what you mean. Okay.
Peg, go ahead, please.
Yes.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. The larger circle has a dark circumference to it. The small dark circle also has that, but I think we could say that the white circle on the bottom does not.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a large, a small dark, and then a small white.
Okay, the dark I think is meant to be of equal size to the light, and
okay.
Kind of an optical illusion that, and I've seen what you're seeing now, that
okay.
Because it's enclosed by the dark, the light circle looks smaller. But in fact, they're the same size. But yes, the so what I'll do is just include this comment: the large circle is. Let's see, how do we say this? Is encircled by a dark line?
You know, I didn't know if there was maybe something to the fact that there were two similar and one that was not, so that...
I see. No, that's...
Almost
that's
like a father, father-son, and then mother being different.
Yeah, no, in fact, it's the two dots should be precisely the same, but it's true that the outside circle is, you know, has that line around it. However, I think in a sense that's a apocryphal. That's not a part of the essential nature of this image. I hadn't even thought of this before. I think it's there mainly to set it off from the page.
It could be.
But it's there, so let's include it.
Okay.
Okay, any other thoughts?
From Aaliyah, the curved lines seem to be in Fibonacci proportion.
Well, that's very interesting. The curved lines are actually in equal proportion. So that would only be true in the first two numbers of the Fibonacci sequence, where it goes 1 and 1. So, but it's, you'll find that as we move into the attributes, the more advanced attributes a little later, that there is a Fibonacci element to this, to the yin-yang symbol. So hold that thought. Any others?
Kay says the light and dark imply negative and positive charges.
Ah, that's interesting. I think that is in the next section. Because whenever you have imply or seems like or, you know, could be, anything like that, then we're moving into meaning, right? And that is a very important meaning. So let's hold that one. And I thought we were going to have trouble with the meaning column, but it doesn't sound like we are at all. Any more purely physical attributes? In other words, just what you see in front of you.
Martin, go ahead.
Yes, there's a large, a dark, and large white. There's a small white and a large white.
Yeah. I'm going to write, there's a, say, large and small white and a large and small, not sloth, dark. Okay, does that work for you?
Yes.
Great. Thank you, Martin. Any more?
Go ahead, Walter.
Yes, the light section is above the dark section, or at least there's more light above dark than there is dark above light.
Good point. Righty. Outstanding.
Any diagonal when divided in half is axis opposite of the other radius. I probably said that wrong.
Any diagonal when divided in half. I'm not getting the meaning of that. I'm sorry.
Here, let me.
Yeah, bring them up.
Dorothy, please explain.
Yeah, Dorothy, can you tell us what you had in mind? Are you there? You have to undo your self-mute. Hello? Okay, we'll come back to you as soon as you figure out how to get through, if you can, because some people can only type. I have a feeling that when I get to the list, the observations that I've made, that I'm going to cover this, because I have a feeling I know what you're talking about, but so your point will probably be covered. Okay, are there any others? If not, we can move on.
Yeah, Allison, if you flip the image, it would be identical on any axis.
Oh, very interesting, yes. Hmm. And when by identical, you mean of identical proportion? Because it's not going to be visually identical. you know, the white and dark would split. I assume you mean in terms of propulsion.
Allison, can you explain?
Okay. Any other thoughts?
I have a couple others here that are similar to what we've already got.
Okay, let's not do them. If they're similar enough that we've covered it. Then.
Yeah, and both Allison and Dorothy say type and only, so. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Hold on just 1 second. Brett, is there bad static when I talk?
No, not on this end.
Okay, there is on my end. But if it's not on your end, then we're good to go. Okay.
I'm still having trouble with you.
Okay, one more from Eva. Okay.
Hi. There's a two-ness, and this two-ness is repeated two times.
Yes. It's right. I'm going to just put it this way. It's two times two. And how perfect. We ended with 17. Yes, this is essential, isn't it? Because one of the qualities that DK asks us to be aware of is the numerical quality, right? So there is a kind of a double two-ness, all enclosed by one, right? Okay. Outstanding. Great.
I see Dorothy's hand up, so I'm going to give her.
Yes,
go ahead, Dorothy.
Okay, is this working?
Yes.
Okay, if you draw a diagonal, any diagonal to the center, then every line is going to be the opposite in color of the other, or the pattern, or whatever, is what
okay.
I meant.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Right, so one point of origin of any line going through the center will originate in a white and end in a dark, or vice versa. Is that what you mean?
Right.
Right, thank you.
Or the pattern will be reversed if you draw through the little circles, too.
Okay, yeah, I see what you mean, yeah. Okay, so, gosh, I'm going to write that. Oh, wait a minute here, let me give you a number. That's not said brilliantly, but I think we get the point. Okay, folks, we've run out of room, so we'll call that it on our list of physical attributes, unless you have something that's distinctly different than what we have already. So is there any further comments on this? Okay, then let's move on. All right, this is a list that I made beforehand. Some points have already been mentioned. Others haven't. The first one is Terry mentioned, all lines are curvilinear. But some of these others are, if you need to be aware of the underlying geometry and in order to see them. So the second point is there is a partially indicated circle encircling each of the two dots. So you have a half circle here, which is indicated, but the circle actually goes all the way around, doesn't it? There's a circle here, and then the same thing here. So what you have is two half-sized circles that are encompassed by the larger circles. and half of it is visible and half of it is implied. The two visible halves of these circles also describe the shape of the tail of their opposite, right? So the visible side of the dark half circle describes the tail of the white circle, right? All right, let's see what else we have here. The diameter of each of these circles is equal to the radius of the large circle. So the diameter of these half circles is equal to the radius of the large encompassing circle. An opposite colored dot appears in each half, which, when bisected, and that bisected line extended, so we're bisecting the small dots, and when we extend that bisected line, we have the diameter of the large circle. Therefore, the diameter is implied by the position of the two small dots. If you include this diameter, you have a sine wave, because if you, for instance, flip this thing 90 degrees, then this becomes a sine wave that is generated from this diameter line. Okay? The S-shaped line that divides this figure into two parts changes direction, moving from describing the circumference of one half circle to describing the circumference of the other right at the midway point. You can see how, you know, some of these physical attributes seem to just speak of meaning right away. Right? Passing through the S-curve that divides this figure changes the direction from clockwise to counterclockwise. So if you're moving along here clockwise, you come around this circle and you enter the S-curve and you go through it, when you come out the other side, you're going counterclockwise. Okay. Now, though you couldn't know this without measuring, the circumference of the two circles, remember I've had a month to think about this, so the circumference of these two circles is together equals the circumference of the large outer circle. Kind of an amazing fact. Let's see, what else do I have? Okay, I think that's about it. So, you know, the point here is to list any and everything we can think of, because you never know when some physical attribute might contribute to the symbol's meaning. So let's move into the second phase of DK's method of determining the import of the symbol. Let's get a reader for this. Somebody like to volunteer to read this? Yeah?
I don't see any hands yet.
Well, somebody will raise their hand, I'm sure.
Okay. Walter, go ahead. You need to unmute yourself. There you go.
B, conceptually, this involves arriving at its underlying idea, which may be expressed in its name, at its meaning as that emerges in the consciousness through meditation, and at its significance as a whole or in part. You should, when doing this, bear in mind that the idea connotes the higher or abstract intent, that the meaning is that intent expressed in terms of the concrete mind, and that its significance has in it more of an emotional quality and might be expressed as the type of desire it arouses in you.
Thank you, Walter. Yeah, so we have, you know, DK ascribes meaning to the concrete mind and significance to the emotional realm. That's his penchant for being very precise with the use of English words, something we're not used to in daily speech. You know, we might think meaning and significance, you know, are have the same quality, but and he places meaning as very much mental, and significance is more emotional. So referencing our list of physical attributes, what meaning or significance can we ascribe to the symbol? Here's our symbol again. Now, by way of some background info, traditional Taoist teaching describes yin, represented by the black side, as slow, soft, yielding, diffuse, cold, wet, and passive, and is associated with water, earth, the moon, femininity, and nighttime. Yang, by contrast, is considered to be fast, hard, solid, focused, hot, dry, and aggressive, and is associated with fire, sky, the sun, masculinity, and daytime. Theosophically, yin is related to the form world, and yang to spirit. So again, let's make a list, which I've started with a couple of seed thoughts to give you an idea of what we're looking for. The first is the realm of the pairs of opposites is contained within the realm of unity. Okay. Second is yin and yang represent opposite and equal qualities of a unified concept. You can see how this is directly related to the physical attribute that I can't remember just which one of you brought up about the precise symmetry. Was that you, Aloy? No, it wasn't Aloy. Anyway, the symmetry of the light and the dark, right? That you have a precise representation of opposite and equal qualities. So that's just to get us going. So if possible, when you give your description, when we call on you, cite the physical attribute that gave rise to your idea. In fact, it's a very good way to come up with meaning, which is to focus on some physical attribute, and we had 18 listed, and then I gave you a bunch more, and then determine the meaning from that. So, any thoughts? We had a few people from before, and you're welcome to raise your hand again and give those same thoughts, because they're very good ones. Yael?
Yeah, just give me a second here.
Sure.
Leah, go ahead.
The described attributes of the yin and yang give the represent the opposites of magnetism and electricity.
Mm.
Which brings in first and second aspect.
It's very interesting. Yes. Describe attributes in the yin and yang, just describe magnetism and electricity, and then what was your further point? Is that it?
My fault. Hold on one second. Let me find her again. Go ahead, Leah, but you need to unmute yourself.
That would bring in the first and second aspect, or the other way around, second and first.
Oh, I see. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Okay, excellent. Thank you, Leah. Okay, this is a terrific example. Keep in mind of what you can apply the yin yang symbol to. One of the fundamentals. But there are literally tens of thousands of opposites, right? So let's not get into a list of all the opposites, not here. What I want to focus on here is the not examples of what the yin-yang symbol can represent, but rather a direct extension of what the physical attributes bring forth on a conceptual level. So do we have any other thoughts?
Yes, we've got a question or a hand up, but let me read a couple of the comments from Malia.
Okay.
Two halves suggest the symbol for cancer, in which incarnation is said to begin.
Oh, I understand. Yes, okay. So, okay.
Francis?
Yeah.
I'm going to turn this over to Kay. I'm getting very bad static. Brett is hearing it as well. Something, maybe my microphone is going out, so Kay is going to pick up for me. Sorry.
Okay. Well, that's all right.
Okay.
We'll know you're there.
We have three hands up. We have Dorothy, Arrest.
Kay, can you turn your volume up? You're quite low.
Oh, sorry. My mouthpiece was up top of my head. Okay, three hands are up. Dorothy, Orest, and Kay. So we'll take Dorothy first.
Yes. By the way, I'm not going to list the cancer aspect just because it's an example of a polarity. And there are literally thousands of these potential ways of using the yin-yang to describe a polar opposite. We could say, oh, this reminds me of wet and dry. This reminds me of hot and cold. This, you know, there's many different polarities. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, you start out at the bottom of that S shape.
Yes.
At the very bottom, you're in total darkness.
Mm.
And then as you move along the S, you get more and more light, and it goes kind of straight all across the middle, and then you end up at a point of total light at the top.
Well, you're stealing my thunder. This is one of my main points in the next section. Oh, that's terrific that you are seeing that. I think that's one of the most it's one of the best things about this symbol. Okay, so you begin from at the bottom. In darkness.
Actually, it's total darkness. It's a single point, but it's totally dark.
That's right. In total darkness, you're absolutely right. In total darkness, and gradually, light increases until when emerging at the top, there is total light. Great, terrific point. That's very, very astute. Anyone else? Thoughts on the meaning of this?
We have Orest, hand up. I'll unmute you, Orest, now.
I've come in a little bit late, so I'm not sure if you've mentioned this, but I see the circle and the dot as the originating figure that we discussed much earlier, or the sphere and the point. And this is like a microcosm of it, or a fractal of it.
Mm. Yeah, so the circle, the outer circle, right? The enclosing circle represents the absolute that we discussed before. Is that what you're saying? And that the two inner circles represents the fractal nature of it? Am I getting that?
I'm trying to visualize this not as a two-dimensional diagram, but as a three-dimensional image, mm-hmm. and also in motion. And somehow it's a microcosm of the bigger. It's like a fractal. That's all I can say at this stage.
So this symbol is a fractal or microcosmic representation of what would you say, Oles?
The absolute.
Of the absolute. Okay. Thanks, Oles. Yes. You know, one of the fascinating things about this is that even though it's the penultimate symbol of duality, it's enclosed in the one, isn't it? That's why I put that at the very top of the list. The realm of the pairs of opposites is contained within the realm of unity. So no matter how we move towards the many, we are still within the realm of the one, of the absolute. Other thoughts?
We have another hand. Kay?
Yes. I see the, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I see the yang as the causative element and the yin as the receptive.
Yes.
And I'll bring this down a little bit into just an example within the human body. Mm-hmm. The upper part of the body is considered yang. And I'm looking at the dark symbol in the white area, and my sense is that's probably the heart chakra that is just that receptive energy. And then if you take it down to the lower body, that would be the lower half of our body is yin, but you could also say that the hara center would be the light within that lower part of the body. And that's just kind of what's coming to me now. So it's those two small centers that actually unite these two aspects of nature.
I see. Yeah, the light dark within the black, and then dark.
Right, and that's within us, each one of us, too.
Okay. I apologize for the, you know, just saying it applies to the human body, but, you know.
Well, no, I mean, I'm just bringing it down into the little,
yeah.
You know, it can apply to anything, I'm sure.
Yes, it does, and that's the brilliance of the symbol. It actually reveals itself more thoroughly when you use a specific example. But at this point, we're, you know, the fact that yang is causative and yin is receptive is an essential aspect of this, right? It's not a physical attribute. It's not something you just see there. But it is maybe the very next thing that you would want to mention in terms of conceptual attributes. So thank you for that.
We have another hand. Martin?
Yes, Martin.
Yes, in terms of the implied motion, the white is born of or given birth by the dark, and the dark is born of and given birth from the light, and one dies in the other. It's a perpetual motion, one giving birth to the other.
Yes, thank you very much. Let me think.
Okay, a couple of comments now, Francis.
Okay, go ahead.
Michael Stacey, this is similar to what's been happened before. Each quality, i.e. negative or positive, contains within it the opposite quality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Nancy, the flow of the dark and light shines into each other reinforces the existence of the elements of one inside the other.
Read that again.
The flow of the dark and light sides into each other reinforces the existence of the elements of one inside the other.
I see, yes.
Okay. Allison, a dance of polarity driven clock.
I can't write and pay too close of attention at the same time. Well, the dark and light sides reinforces the
reinforces the existence of the elements of one inside the other.
Yes, this is a fundamental point of the yin-yang. It's a very important point. And next?
Allison, a dance of polarity driven clockwise by two small circles. Each point remains intact.
Drawn clockwise, a dance of polarity.
Driven clockwise.
Driven, okay.
By the two small circles.
Yes.
Each point remains intact.
Mm-hmm.
But is part of the greater whole.
Yes. Yeah.
We have another one from Iris.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. The two dots, small circles, imply dimension.
Mm-hmm.
As do the differences between white and black.
Okay.
And white and black, light and dark.
And light and dark, right.
Yeah. Arrest, figure, ground, shift, vibration. That's a very short comment there.
Figure, ground.
Figure / ground, shift, vibration. Rotary motion inferred.
What's the last statement?
That's part of that same one.
Yeah.
Rotary motion inferred. You can put that together. Okay, and that's it for now.
Okay.
For that.
Right, yeah. In the interest of time, because we're about halfway through the webinar at this point, so we're going to need to move ahead. Let's see if I can drag this down. There we go. All right. Great. Wow, this is a terrific response. It's just great. All right, we have a good list. I'd like to expand on these on some of these ideas and add a few. This symbol is a visual exposition on relative relationship. The seed of its offset lies at the heart of each quality, which is brought up. These seeds act as reference points that define the relative relation between the two qualities, thus making their existence possible. Or as Herman Melville said, there is no quality in this world that is not what it is merely by contrast. Nothing exists in itself. So, remove either quality and they both disappear, at least from the manifested world. But that's another question. There is no ocean wave crest without a wave trough, no plant growth without the enriched soil made possible by plant death. As the son of Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker carried his seed, thus could be tempted by the dark side, whereas it took the example of Luke's incorruptibility to awaken the seed of righteousness within Darth Vader. And note the name, Skywalker, it's pure yang. By coincidence, I once studied with a shaman, an Apache shaman, a woman named Tu Moonwalker, pure yin. So one of the most important messages of this symbol is that apparently opposite or contrary forces are actually complementary, interconnected, and interdependent, that they are separate, disconnected, opposing forces is an illusion. This is one of the fundamental lessons, which the Taoists recorded over 3,000 years ago, that nature and philosophy have to teach us. If humankind practiced this one concept, the interconnected interdependency of the pairs of opposites, we'd be living in a very different world. The yin-yang relationship is fractal in nature, as Orest pointed out. Though water, for example, is yin, its two components, oxygen and hydrogen, give us another yin-yang polarity. And if we divide either oxygen or hydrogen, we have the yin-yang once again in nucleus and electron. This fractal quality suggests the true meaning of the central dots, or one of important meaning of the dots, which is the concept of truly pure yin or yang is an illusion. They always contain within themselves the seed of the other, which was also mentioned by someone. Rather, we have yangness and yinness, just as we have oneness and two-ness, which themselves could be represented by the yin-yang symbol, right? You could have one as the white, for instance, and yang as the two. Of course, the best way to understand the symbol, and we've come to understand this through our discussion, is to apply it to a series of opposites, such as right or wrong, wet and dry, etc. Okay. The outer perimeter of the symbol could be seen as representing cyclical motion or movement, such as we have in birth and death, whereas the S curve could be seen as symbolizing spiralic movement, suggesting a gradual transition from one influence to another, which was brought up in terms of moving from pure darkness to pure light. Such as the movement from personality to soul dominance. And if you'll bear with me, I'd like to develop this one idea just to give you some sense of the incredible potency of this symbol. In this scenario, the dark half represents the personality, at first shrouding, then later illumined by the point of light at the center. The top, light half, represents the soul meditating on the personality, that fragment of itself which it has sent forth into incarnation. Within this extended metaphor, the path of evolution begins on the outer circle. Following clockwise through the signs, the jiva, influenced almost entirely by the personality, round and round through the eons, the separated self travels, right, going round and round. Then at some point, which is represented by the bottom point of the circle, desire begins to express itself as aspiration, and the jiva enters onto the spiralic path, represented by the S-curve, at first following the perimeter of the personality, moving around the center of the personality, but growing in the light, as someone pointed out, until it reaches that critical midway point, which we hear so much about in DK's teachings, where the jiva's center of gravity shifts and it begins to follow the perimeter of the soul. As it continues, the influence of the personality grows less and less until it emerges finally at the top. Now moving counterclockwise through the signs, reversal on the great wheel has been made. Personality and soul have become as one. The move from I am to I am that has been made. Now, if we use this crop circle as our guide, we could even continue this journey, this time moving from soul to monad on the upper circle, very much in the same way that we just did with the personality and soul. Notice how here you have this is reversed, but you know the personality is on the bottom, the soul on top. Here you have the soul on the bottom and another kind of darkness altogether up here, which is that primordial darkness of the absolute where you've moved beyond light, right? Okay. Before we move on to DK's third and final method for exploring the symbol, let's go back to the physical attributes for a moment, this time armed with a compass and straight edge. As noted before, there are two circles within the larger circle. You see them here now outlined in yellow, right? And they form the basis of the yin-yang symbol. First, we'll place the point of our compass where you see this down-pointing arrow, right? And draw this larger circle. And this circle just touches the edges of these two inner circles, okay? So it's this radius. Next, we'll draw a circle whose perimeter intersects the two points where the arc formed by the circle we just drew crosses the extended diameter of our figure. So this arc is the top of that circle, that big circle here that we just drew, right? It's this upper edge right up here. So that's this arc. Now if you draw a diameter line through the center of this, the two points where that arc and the diameter meet give us a circumference for a larger circle. We just simply open our compass to one of these points and draw a larger circle. If we then enclose our original circle in a square, we have squared the circle. A figure whose meaning should be familiar to those who attended the last webinar. We talked to some degree about the idea that squaring the circle, the upshot being that it represents when spirit and matter are in balance. The square representing, of course, the material world, and the circle representing the spiritual. So there's two forms of squaring the circle. One is by area and one is by the circumference. And but they essentially represent the same idea. So we have then this concept. We've squared the circle. Now this is all inherent in the yin-yang symbol. We didn't add anything. We got this strictly by a compass and a ruler. So inherent to the quality of the yin-yang symbol is this squaring the circle. Now, by the way, if you miss a webinar, like if you'd like to review this idea of squaring the circle, you can find previous webinars on makara.org, M-A-K-A-R-A.org. But that's not all this figure has to offer. If we draw a small circle using the bottom point of the enclosing circle here as the center point, scribing it in such a way that it just touches the perimeter of these two inner circles, and then connect the points created by the two arcs, you can see what we get. we get a pentagon, which opens up the world of phi, because this relationship, this diagonal line from this point to this point, is in a phi relation to any one of these sides, which is 1 to 1.618, right? So it's fascinating, isn't it, that the arc that allows us to define the outer circle, this arc here is really the key, because it gives us this outer circle with this point, and it also gives us that point that delineates the phi. And then, as if to underscore the fact that this is just not a fluke, this lower arc also delineates a relationship that gives us the phi, which is the pentagon. So being more a fourth than a fifth grade person, I can't help but respond to the elegance of this geometrical revelation available to anyone with a compass and a straight edge. Remember last month's discussion on the affinity between 2 and 5? Well, now we can at least begin to form the hypothesis that 2 stands in a causal relationship to 5. It's demonstrated through the geometry. So both the squaring of the circle and the pentagon are inherent but hidden aspects of the yin-yang symbol. Okay. So, what is the relevance of the pentagon in relation to the yin-yang? Well, first of all, let's revisit DK's second directive, right, which is the conceptual. What meaning or significance can be derived from this new information? If you have an insight, feel free to raise your hand. Meanwhile, I'll walk you through my findings. First of all, we've seen that the pairs of opposites represented by the two small circles are geometrically causal to the concept of squaring the circle. Without these two inner circles, you would not be able to create the arc that reveals the outer circle, which then allows for the squaring of the circle, right? And when you think about it, this makes perfect sense on a conceptual level, as the square and the circle are themselves in a yin-yang relationship to each other. And since the yin and yang symbols are equal in proportion, it makes sense that the circle and square would also be equal. But what about the relevance of the pentagon in relation to the yin-yang, besides the natural affinity that we discovered to exist between 2 and 5? One answer lies in the twofold nature of the golden mean, or phi, which is the transrational function of the number 5, depicted here. But to the Greeks, the golden mean also represented a subjective concept. It governed the right proportion of a particular quality. For example, courage. Too much yang and courage becomes foolhardiness, right? Too much yin and it becomes cowardice. Following the golden mean was Icarus's task to fly between the yang sun and the yin water. As Icarus shows us, it's not such an easy thing to do. So both the yin and yang symbols and the golden mean, which is derived from the pentagon, describe different ways of looking at both balance and the middle path. Okay, now I think we're ready for DK's third phase in the contemplation of the symbol. Could we get a reader for this? Anyone like to read this third phase? Okay.
I'm watching for hands. No one at the moment. Oh, yes, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
Sure. See, esoterically, This would cover the effect of the force or energy upon you and of the quality of the vibration it may arouse in you. Perhaps in some center, perhaps in your astral body, or perhaps only in your mind.
Thank you. Having familiarized ourselves with the yin-yang symbol, let's seize the moment, because we're now permeated with ideas about its physical characteristics and its significance and meaning. So let's seize the moment and reflect on where in ourselves this symbol affects us. This can be in which center it affects us or in which body. We'll take exactly one moment for this meditation. So in what center or in what body does this symbol affect you? Keep in mind as you contemplate that symbols, rather than being descriptions of potencies, such as languages, are inherently potent. Thus they have the potential to penetrate and reveal and therefore call forth the intuition. Okay, let's meditate for one moment starting now. Okay, this is just a taste. I urge you to further explore all three phases of VK's method for understanding and integrating a symbol. You'll find if you apply the symbol to a particular pair of opposites that the meaning will be much more forthcoming. Let's take a break from the heavy lifting, or should I say heavy listing, and cruise through some of the other attributes associated with two-ness. The color associated with the number two, or more specifically the second ray, is indigo. If we are even to begin to fathom the pervasive influence of indigo, we must first expand our understanding of color. DK tells us, it is a truism to say that sound is color, and color is sound. Yet, so it is. And the topic I really seek to bring to your attention is not so much sound as sound, but the color effects of sound. I seek to emphasize especially that all sounds express themselves in color. So how is this possible? Maybe because a sound and its associated color are expressions of two complementary rates of vibration. So another way we could use the yin-yang symbol is to compare a sound with its associated color. We see right away that the seed of each lies in the other, and that they are two expressions of the same phenomena. DK tells us that indigo is the goal of endeavor, not that the disciple will see an indigo color when he reaches the goal, but that indigo is itself the goal of endeavor. He also says the solar logos is spoken of as the blue logos, literally indigo, those are his words. So the color of the perfected man and of the auric envelope through which he manifests will be predominantly blue, read indigo. So if our vibration is purely indigo, we have reached the goal of endeavor, the stage called perfected man, because we have aligned our vibration expressed as color with the pervading second ray, which is the ray of the solar logos. By the way, often blue is substituted for indigo in DK's writings. I suspect that the blue lodge is in truth indigo. One other important fact about indigo. All the colors we know are actually expressions of indigo. So for instance, the third ray is not green, but is rather indigo green. The fourth ray, not yellow, but indigo yellow. So exactly what color is indigo? DK describes it this way. Can we get a reader for this? Somebody want to volunteer? Read this line, these lines. Okay, do we have anyone?
Asha had her hand up before. I wonder if she'd like to do this one. Asha, would you like to go ahead?
Yes, can you hear me?
A little bit louder, please, sweetie.
Oh, is this better?
Yeah, a little bit more.
Okay. The true indigo is the blue of the vault of heaven on a moonless night. It is the culmination and that the attainment by all of synthesis, the solar night will supervene. Hence, the color corresponds to what the sky nightly proclaims. Indigo absorbs.
This last statement, thank you. This last statement is especially it's especially interesting. Indigo absorbs. It suggests that we're all being absorbed or taken towards the energy and the vibration that is indigo. Great mysteries here, of course. But it certainly does add import to the whole concept of color, doesn't it? For those of you who are especially fascinated by this subject of color, I cannot too strongly recommend letter number 7 from Letters on Occult Meditation. Okay, the Tarot Arcana, associated with the number 2, is the High Priestess. Here's the traditional Rider-Waite image, which has been stunningly reinterpreted in what's called the Illuminati deck. It's a little bit pixelated, but you can get a sense of it. You have to be careful in choosing these gorgeous decks to make sure that they carry all of the symbols of that are inherent to the Rider-Waite. I use this as my, the Rider-Waite is my main deck, and then I use other decks because they're quite expressive, but only if they have carried intact the symbol. For instance, you see that there's no cross on the chest of this symbol. The moon is placed in a different set place, but generally speaking, it's an intact representation. First and foremost, this arcanum represents the moon. It is holy, feminine, and virginal. We see sitting before us the chief feminine elder, or primary receptive aspect of the life power, what alchemists call prima materia, first matter, which is another word for mother, first mother. This is archetypal receptivity and the most sacred aspect of two-ness, represented in religion and myth by the Virgin Mother, Mary, Isis, the Greek Artemis, and the Roman Diana. The Shakti in Hinduism, here shown as Samantabhadra, which, as you can imagine, shocked the English missionaries in India, depicts, though not quite so virginally, this same sacred receptivity. The coitus is, of course, a metaphor for receptivity. But back to the Tarot. The most one great expression of the two-ness is seen in the two pillars, one black and one white. The Bible tells us in 2 Chronicles, verse 17, and he reared up the pillars before the temple, one on the right hand and the other on the left, and called the name of that on the right hand Yakin, and the name of that on the left Boaz. Albert Pike, a prominent figure in late 19th century masonry, tells us in his book, Morals and Dogma, the solstices Cancer and Capricorn, the two gates of heaven, are the two pillars of Hercules beyond which he, the sun, never journeyed. And they still appear in our lodges as the two great columns, Yakin and Boaz. And what is for me my, what is for me my go-to book for the Tarot, entitled simply The Tarot, Paul Foster Kay says, this is a picture of the two columns. The solstices, for strength, this is from Paul Foster Kay. For strength, Boaz, let me go back here to the pillars, is rooted in resistance or inertia, which is the negation of the establishing principle of all things, Yakin. So you have, on the left, you have the not depicted as black, but as the black pillar, which is the negation of the establishing principle. It's the yin-yang, again, of Yakin. The high priestess sits between the two pillars because, The high priestess is between the two pillars because she is the equilibrating power between the yes and the no, the initiative and the resistance, the light and the darkness. In the ancient wisdom teachings, these pillars could be seen as representing the dweller on the threshold on the left and the angel of the presence on the right, which the initiate, assuming the equilibrating role of the high priestess, must pass between. Notice here that the pillars don't stand at the entrance to the temple, but the actual temple is beyond the pillars. So YAH, Yah, as in Yakin, also appears in the Kabbalistic Tree of Life as the name of the second of the ten Sephiroth, also called Chokmah. You'll see it up in the right-hand corner here, entitled Chokmah. According to the Book of Job, wisdom comes from nothingness. Nothingness being, if you remember from last time, an attribute of Keter, which is the topmost Sephiroth. So, Chokmah is seen as the first point of manifested existence in the realm of time and space, yet still in a formless state. The form exists only as potential. Chokmah corresponds to the Zelen Elohim, the divine image, and in that system to the right eye or right hemisphere of the brain. It is also associated with the power of intuitive insight from the superconscious or Buddhic realm. Thus, it is related to conceptual essence, where, for instance, the archetypal ideas of substantive symbols and geometric forms have their being. Chokmah is the initiating force in the creative process. The first words of the Torah, which are equivalent to, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, are, with Chokmah, God created. So, in terms of theosophy, we are looking at the second logos, the essence or potency of the creative aspect, but before creation itself. According to the Bahir, a first century mystical work whose name means Book of the Brightness, Chokmah is both infinitely small and yet encompasses the whole of being. Okay, moving right along. The glyph used in the modern Western world to represent the number two traces its root back to the Brahmin Indians, who wrote two as two equal horizontal lines. Actually, the modern Chinese and Japanese languages still use this glyph. Linguistically, two has developed, not surprisingly, along two lines, coming on the one hand from the root di, and du, from which come divide, descent, dilemma, and dichotomy for the di root, and dual, duo, duet, and deuce for the du root, the du root. The other line of development comes from the root tw, implying to join, such as the twin, twine, and twain. Both linguistic lines of development gain their meaning from the tension of polarity, of oneness expressed as duality, the fundamental condition of existence itself, expressed by the yin-yang symbol. This polarity can be harmonious, that is, seeking to express the one inherent in two-ness, or disharmonious, thus emphasizing separation. In A Beginner's Guide to the Universe, Michael Schneider gives us a list of opposites, followed by the comment that being lured to one pole or the other hides the unifying principle. You know, in our lives, we're so used to seeking the good, but the truth lies between good and bad, evil and righteousness, as DK often hints. Of course, the complete list would include thousands of pairs of opposites. If we add a U in, as in undemocratic, A-N-T-I, as in anti-establishment, A, as in asynchronous, IL as in illegal, DE as in deregulate, IN as in insensitive, or DIS as in disintegrate, the list grows, you know, to thousands upon thousands of pairs of opposites, all to which the yin-yang symbol can be applied. Many spiritual disciplines, most notably Buddhism, speak of a middle path, which is not, as it seems to some, a compromising, concessionary way, for it leads between the pairs of opposites, called in theosophy the razor's edge, which frees us from either influence, thus allowing us to realign with the unifying principle. A symbol of this unifying principle, as it relates to the yin-yang symbol, was given us through a crop circle, here analyzed by Bert Jansen. The principle of the pairs of opposites is found in every ancient culture, religion, and mythology. Here we have Horus and Seth holding up a talisman that represents the sacred middle path, which is crowned by a beetle reaching for the sun. In Greek mythology, the pairs of opposites is illustrated by the two sea monsters, sometimes described as two great whirlpools, Charybdis and Scylla, or Scylla, who lived opposite each other in the narrow Strait of Messina. Sailors attempting to avoid one of the monsters, or whirlpools, were in danger of coming within reach of the other. The implications become obvious if we keep in mind that monsters represent distortions of the truth, more particularly, in the case of sea monsters, astral plane distortions, right? And of course, whirlpools, they pull you down into the depths of the water, which is metaphor for the astral plane. Okay. I am determined to get through two on this in this webinar, so I'm going to skip some material here. Gosh, wow, it's a lot of material. Let's see here. All right. I'd like to finish up, we're really just 5 minutes out, by taking a look at an esoteric passage that leads, that sheds a unique light on the nature of pi. And let's see, I'm going to shift down here in my slides to, okay. pi is a transrational function associated with the number 2. You may remember at the very beginning of our first session, I introduced the concept of sacred geometry with this quote from the Secret Doctrine. Can we get a reader to read this for us? Anyone like to step up and read this? Kay, any volunteers?
I can't see. Oh, yes, Scott.
Terrific. Thank you, Scott.
You're unmuted, Scott.
From the effulgency of light, the ray of the utter darkness, sprung in space three reawakened energies, the one from the egg, the 6, and the 5, then the 3, the 1, the 4, the 1, the 5, the twice 7, the sum total. And these are the essences, the flames, the elements, the builders, the numbers, the arupa, and the force of divine man, the sum total.
Thank you, Scott. First, we need to understand that in numerology, numbers can be viewed in many different ways. For example, the above number, 1065, you see here where it says the one from the egg. Well, the egg there is actually representing the cipher 0. So we have 1065, right? And this number can also be expressed as 21 because this is in numerology, not in straight math, because 10 plus 6 plus 5 equals 21, which is 3 times 7, okay? In gematria, which is the study of the numerical value of words, 1065 is the number of Jehovah, the firstborn, which is not God transcendent, but rather a creator God, right? This is it's more akin to a third logos level. Blavatsky likes to speak of Jehovah as a lunar lord. In the Hindu tradition, there were 21 Prajapatis. Now remember, 21 is a direct offshoot of the number 1065, which translates as Lord of Creatures. So if you know the Hindu translation of Prajapati is Lord of Creatures, so you can see the connection here. Jehovah might be seen as the sum total of the Prajapatis. Jehovah through JVE is also related to Jupiter by Jove, remember? Now, 1065 is also the number of the phrase, Big Macs are the secret to eternal life. So just because a word or phrase adds up to a particular number doesn't mean that that word or phrase represents the esoteric meaning of the number. But we can at least hypothesize that Jehovah is an important aspect of the number 1065, especially since the concept of the, quote, reawakened energies, which you see here in this stanza, is in keeping with the activities of a creator God. But it is in the next line of the verse that is of particular interest to us at this time. Then the 3, the 1, the 4, the 1, the 5, the twice 7, sum total. I'm sure it has occurred to some of you that these numbers, 3, 1, 4, 1, 5, form that ratio that we call pi, which is the relationship of the diameter to the perimeter of a circle, and the transrational function of the number 2, personified, possibly, by the second logos. It could be described as the law by which the one, through the auspices of two-ness, becomes the many. Remember the, gosh, I don't know if I mentioned it. I don't believe I did. The Greeks believed that two represented a door that was stood between the one and the many. And so through the auspices of two-ness, the one becomes the many. To quote HPB's commentary, thus the firstborn of Brahma Prajapati indicates a measuring use of a circular relation taken from the chakra, or Vishnu, and the resulting divine manifestation takes the form of life and the firstborn. So this is really a direct reference to the concept of pi, of the diameter being the manifestation and the measuring use of a circular relation, is that which is employed by the Brahma Prajapati, which is the creative aspect. Ralston Skinner, in his book, The Source of Measures, associates through gematria, the Hebrew word Elohim, in modern parlance, Elohim, with 3.1415, equating them with the personified forces of nature. So we can see a theme developing here. Jehovah, the Prajapatis, and the Elohim are all related to the creator aspect, as well as 3.1415. I like this image. It's not mine. It appears to be the energetic aspect of the circle in a creative form, in its creative aspect. Now, HBB describes this number, 3.1415, as the numerical hierarchy of the Dhyani Choans, which together form the Dhyani Pasha, the rope of angels, a ring pass knot which hedges off the phenomenal world from the noumenal cosmos. And of course you understand that that's the barrier between the absolute and all things two-ness, right? Now, 3 plus 1 plus 4 plus 1 plus 5 equals 14, or 2 times 7, which is also the number of the mystic swastika, which represents the impelling force of spirit moving into matter, and, when reversed, vice versa. We just don't have time. In fact, we're out of time, but if you'll just bear with me a few more moments to go any further with this. But I suggest you ponder the fact that the entities described here are a specific revelation of the nature of the transfunctional, irrational function we call pi, right? The essences, the flames, the elements. These are actually associated with the three, the one, the four, the one, the pi. And I combed Blavatsky to see if she elucidated this more, and she didn't. I think it's secret information. And I think this is as close, what we're seeing here is as close to inside info as we're ever likely to find on this side of the portals of initiation, at least in terms of these trans-rational functions. Nowhere else, to my knowledge, is the esoteric nature of a transrational number revealed as it is in this verse. So I hope you've enjoyed our journey through the many aspects of the number two. I had to cut out a lot. I'm sorry. But we're going to move on in the next section to the Vesica Pisces, which is the doorway between two and three. It's how three comes forth from two-ness. Here's an updated reading list. For those of you who are very interested in sacred geometry, get going with Robert Walder's 100-plus page book called Simply Sacred Geometry. I believe you can find it online. In fact, I'm sure you can. I brought it up. There's a PDF online, so you can do it for free. This is just maybe 10 pages, fascinating insights. And if you're especially interested in color, I'm repeating myself, check out Letter 7 from Letters on Occult Meditation. If you're following, you probably have read these two chapters in The Key to the Universe and A Beginner's Guide to Constructing the Universe on the number two. A meditation on two-ness. Choose a polarity, for example, light, dark, dry, wet, male, female, but one that is particularly meaningful to you, and apply the yin-yang symbol to it in meditation. This can be, you can bring this right into the practical level. For instance, if you're with a partner, you can imagine your partner as the, you know, it's the opposite half. And meditate on your unity in terms of the yin-yang symbol and how the seed of each of you lies in the other. It's just suggestions for meditation, as you see, it's a truly amazing symbol. Okay, I'd like to have, here's a Viscopisi that we'll be exploring next time. I guess that's it. Let's see, how do I have the invocation on here? Well, since I do have the invocation, I guess I don't. I was hoping to ask Michael to speak this, but since I don't have it written on a slide, which I thought I did. Okay. So let's have a closing invocation.
Before we go, Francis, I'd just like to do an update on your other recordings, Sacred Geometry recordings. You said makara.org. It is makara.us.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, okay. Yeah. Thank you for that. Okay, since this invocation expresses itself as a series of pairs of opposites, I'd like to use the same one as we did last month. During this invocation, DK suggests that we, quote, visualize a sphere of deep electric blue, vivid and living, end quote. May the energy of the divine self inspire us and the light of the soul direct. May we be led from darkness to light, from the unreal to the real, from death to immortality. We stand in spiritual being, and as souls we serve. We stand within the light, and as that light shines throughout our forms, we radiate that light. We stand within the love of God, and as that love streams through and from the heart, we magnetize the ones we seek to aid. That's from Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1. Okay, sorry to take you over. The listing took a little longer than I expected. That's it for today. Don't forget to donate a couple of bucks on MoriaFederation.com, which will help pay the yearly fee for the GoToMeeting account. And finally, please tell your friends about this webinar. I'd love to fill up the class. So thank you for attending, and I'll see you next time, which will be on September 21st, same time, just a couple of days before the fall equinox. Okay, thank you, and bye for now.